The smudge came back as a diffuse return, essentially undecipherable. So he used his binoculars to get a closer look. It took him a second or two to get the target in focus and another second to make sense of what he was seeing. But once he figured it out, his throat clamped up and his chest went cold. It wasn't a cloud of smoke or leaves. It was a flock of crows, a very big flock of crows. Parkhurst jumped onto the radio. Flight 065, emergency China Lear, alter your course immediately to Bering, but by then, given the speed of the jet, it was just too damn little, too damn late. Parkhurst got a brief return transmission from the co-pilot. Tower, we are, followed by a shrill Chinese curse. The scarlet and gold jet, glittering in the morning sunlight, punched straight into that flock of crows and burst out the other side, its fuselage streaked with blood and matted black feathers, the starboard engine trailing a thin plume of blue smoke. The jet was already losing altitude. The pilot was on the radio again. Tower, this is flight 065. We have multiple bird strikes. Repeat, multiple bird strikes. Visibility zero. Then there was only crackle and static. In the tower, they all stood in stunned shock as the Learjet skewed to port, its nose dipped. The leftward bank quickly turned into a roll, and then a rapidly narrowing spiral. The nose dipped, dipped farther. The plane went into a nosedive. The radio came back to life. The pilot had reverted to Hakka and was screaming into his mic. In the background, they could hear voices and shouts and metallic racket of the airframe juddering. The pilot came back in English. Tower, we are going in. We are going in. They all heard one last transmission. Tell my son. Then a hoarse cry. The Lear slammed into the ground 2 miles away, right in the middle of the 14th green of the Enora Mercer Golf and Country Club. It exploded into a yellow and red and black fireball that flared outwards and rose up into the sky. A few moments later, the guys in the tower felt the shock wave hit the windows, a dull, percussive thud, followed by a rolling boom. There goes my career, Parkhurst was thinking, and then, as an afterthought, poor souls. 1,000 feet above the crash site, the flock of crows reformed, drew into a tight cloud that took on the shape of a scythe as it flew low across the town, wheeling and soaring, filling the cool, clear air with their brassy cries, and then it rose up in one coherent mass and disappeared into the east in the direction of Tallulah's Wall. There was a graveyard silence in the tower, except for somebody at the back of the room who said, in a small voice full of awe, "Holy shit!" Parkhurst swallowed with pain and got on to fire an ambulance. While he was calling it in, one of the other controllers, a new kid named Matt Lamar, studied the flight roster for a moment. He looked up at the other guys, all of whom were still staring out at the mushroom-shaped cloud rising up from the golf course, except now they were barking and yapping and snapping at each other like a pack of deranged labradoodles. "Hey, dudes," he said over the din, and then he said it again louder. "Dudes!" Everybody but John Parkhurst turned around to stare at him. "What?" "Morgan Littlebasket took his Cessna up at 10:22 hours, right?" "Yeah," said one of the guys. "So what?" "So, like, where is he?" The Niceville Black and Whites got to the scene of the Learjet crash in 4 minutes, followed closely by the fire crews. The fireball was raging, and pools of jet fuel were burning off all around the splash zone. It was just too hot to work the blaze. There wasn't much for anybody to do other than to wait for it to die down and check for collateral injuries around the perimeter. All they found was one lone Vic wandering around in a daze, a crumpled little man with a heavily damaged nose and a badly singed face who identified himself as Thad Llewellyn.